Hey everybody, welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. My name is John Kutzmita, and every week I am joined by Brett Johnson, the man behind the dollar milkshake theory. Now, if you are unfamiliar with what that is, you can learn more on our website at milkshakespod.com. Also, I encourage you to visit our YouTube channel at Milkshakes Pod, and you'll see at the top a playlist that says Start Here, and there's a handful of videos that will hopefully take you down the dollar milkshake theory rabbit hole and better explain the US dollar's role as reserve currency. Now, in this episode, we don't spend a ton of time on global reserve currencies, US dollars, and fiat money in general, although a very popular topic on this show. Instead, we look at some of the recent economic data. Last week, we had two employment reports. We dissect the information under the hood and pass the headline number, as well as looking at its potential impact or what it's telling about the second half of the year. Now, Brent admits some of the things he thought would happen the first half of the year were wrong, but he is sharing some of his confidence on how he thinks the second half of the year will play out. I push back a little bit and ask where he could potentially get those predictions wrong as well. So I think for both the lovers and the haters of Brent Johnson and the dollar milkshake theory, there's plenty to get out of this episode. So let's get started with another episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness.
I drink your milkshake.
Brett Johnson, welcome back. Here we are, some interesting statistics for you to start off this episode. We are now on, this is the recording of episode 30 for season one, 2023. And we, upon completing this and uploading it, we'll have 50 videos uploaded to YouTube. So we are well on our way. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's been fun.
It's been good for sure. You know, and speaking of the experiences that we're having here, I feel like it's a safe space for you to come out and tell us if the cocaine in the White House perhaps belong to you.
I have not been anywhere near the White House. It's a very very appropriate name in this case, isn't it? I thought that was pretty good. And then I thought it was pretty funny they came out and they kind of hinted it was near where the vice president would come in. So they're already throwing her under the bus. You know, it's just amazing. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if this happened when Trump was the president?
I know.
Oh my God.
Well, they also they did some FBI investigation and they said that they couldn't determine whose it belonged to, and it's madness, Brent. It's madness.
Yeah, just par for the course. Par for the course.
It is. So it's let's start off with some market stuff, because it was a pretty exciting, there were some exciting moments this week compared to the last 2 weeks, where, you know, violently sideways was a big theme. And then last week it was kind of becoming more of like boringly sideways. But we did have two important data points this week. Well, one data point, two different reports, which was the employment data. First was the ADP report, and that was a huge beat. Bonds got nuked. And then the following day, Friday, we had the NFP, non-farm payroll. The expectations were pretty similar to what ADP expectations were. It came in a little bit short, which if it beat expectations would have been the 15th month in a row for the NFP to beat expectations, which I don't think that's actually happened before, but I could be wrong on that. It's a big deal either way. So that trend was kind of finally snapped, but not in any kind of big way. But what was interesting was that the revisions have been negative for the past 5 months. And this is always an interesting thing to me. I think people are very jaded about things like the employment figure in general, not just NFP, but, you know, the employment number because of things like participation rate. And then we have something like the non-farm payroll, which everyone focuses very, very heavily on. The number comes out. People have whatever their reaction is to it. And then they kind of like just kind of quietly make revisions the next month. And I don't know. I find it hard to kind of trust the data with something, number one, that's a survey. And number two, where there's so much consistencies from the month after when it comes to, you know, the types of revisions that they're doing. So what are your thoughts on this week's economic data, particularly employment, and how you see the second half of the year? Does this change your view and some of your bearish positions?
Yeah, so it's been pretty interesting for a couple of reasons. And, you know, I had this talk with Mike Green, Tony Nash, and Albert Marco yesterday, which we kind of discussed this. And What you're just talking about is the headline versus the actual fundamentals and the actual revisions is really important for a couple of reasons. Is because I feel like the headline kind of drives the narrative. But then the fundamentals, the truth, like if you actually dig into the numbers, if you actually understand how the numbers have changed or how they're calculated, you can sometimes come to a different conclusion than what the headline is telling you. And that can be both a good and a bad thing. It's very good to understand the fundamentals. It's very good to know how those numbers are calculated. Eventually, fundamentals and markets win. But it can also be a hindrance in the short term because headlines drive narrative and narrative drives markets in the short term. So narrative wins in the short term and fundamentals win in the long term. And I feel that's like a little bit what we have going on right now. For basically the whole year, I have said that I actually thought it would happen in the second quarter. It turns out it happened very briefly in the second quarter. And now I'm saying it's going to happen in the second half is that we will have a correction. Now, truth be told, I'll hold up my hand. And I, for the most part, got the first half wrong because other than, you know, that 2 weeks in March, we didn't really have a correction. But part of the reason, and I'm going to use my mistake as an example to show people what I mean here. If you remember at the beginning of the year, I told you what my view was. I thought we were going to have a correction by the second quarter. But I also gave you reasons why I thought I could be wrong, because you always have to figure out how you could be wrong. It turns out that the reasons I gave of how I could be wrong is exactly what happened. Narratives continued to drive market. There was a liquidity trail. There was a liquidity tailwind from Janet Yellen, you know, draining the TGA. Powell, while he was still hiking, was not as hawkish as he had been. And so I explained how I thought markets could continue higher until it hits the wall. Also, higher rates until you hit the wall. Higher rates are actually a benefit or a kind of a stimulus until you actually hit the wall. And so this is what I mean by, you know, even though things were getting worse underneath, in other words, revisions are happening, rates are going higher, which should be negative. You still have to understand that headlines drive markets, and headlines have been such that markets have powered higher despite perhaps deteriorating fundamentals underneath. And so that's kind of where, and I think that gets a lot of people tripped up. I think that's in all kinds of markets and in all kinds of calls is, you know, part of this game is understanding the fundamentals and understanding what's eventually going to happen. But also part of this game is understanding it's a common knowledge game. And the common knowledge game is not betting on what you think is going to happen, but you have to figure out what everybody else thinks is going to happen. I think this came about like back in the 50s or 60s. I think they used to have these beauty contests with pictures of women, and you would have to vote on who you thought was going to be voted the most pretty. So it wasn't your job to go through and figure out who you thought was the prettiest. You had to figure out what everybody else was going to vote to be the prettiest. And whoever got that right, then they would win. And that's kind of how markets are. It's kind of like my view of the dollar and gold. Like, I'm a big believer in gold. I think fundamentally gold is a better store of value than fiat. But I also believe that in the short term, when the shit hits the fan, so to speak, most people will not run to gold. Most people will run to dollars, right? And so you have to kind of understand the fundamental long term and the more practical short term common knowledge game. And so bringing this back to the non-farm payrolls, I think that's what we have going on here. I think the headline is such that it continues to drive the market higher because data has been, for the most part, it's been good, but not so good that everybody thinks that they're going to start hiking really fast again, but good enough that the market's not crashing as well. So it's been kind of a Goldilocks environment. The headline numbers have been kind of this Goldilocks environment where the Fed may hike, but they're getting very close to the end. And, you know, the additional interest rates, you know, pushing money into the economy is pushing markets forward until we hit that wall. And we just haven't hit that wall yet. Now, I still think that we are going to hit that wall sometime in the second half. I think it'll be the third quarter, might be the fourth quarter. It might not happen. I might be wrong again, right? But that's how I see it. And so, you know, it was interesting that this last week, we kind of had a mini version of the violently sideways. If people remember 3 weeks ago, I had said that the markets had hit a level that I thought from a sentiment perspective and a positioning perspective that they had topped out. And we are right there, but we're not very much below it. We're not above it, but we're not below it. And so it's kind of had a mini violently sideways for the last 3 weeks as I've been net short. So while I haven't lost money other than some risk premium on the options, I haven't made any money either. And markets are kind of right where they were. You know, this last week, you know, markets ended high at the end of last week. They had a pull down, you know, Wednesday, Thursday. It was kind of a short week with the holiday, but they had, you know, on the ADP numbers, they sold off on Wednesday, Thursday. The NFP hit, they jumped initially, and throughout the day, they were mostly higher. And it was kind of interesting, the last 30 minutes or 40 minutes, they kind of sold off again. But markets are still kind of right where they were 3 weeks ago. So, you know, I think our narrative of violent sideways is still kind of holding. My bias is that there's a lot more downside than there is upside over the next 6 months. But we'll have to wait and see.
That was quality right there, Brent. I appreciate it. So the headline now, though, or the narrative that's starting to gain some momentum is partly the liquidity factor. But when you're looking at things like the employment data, various asset prices, the idea that the Fed is not done hiking seems to still be, you know, kind of front and center as far as the conversation is concerned. But where's your stance on the narrative around liquidity? How do you feel one side people are looking at various charts and indicators that are showing a slight uptick in liquidity? Maybe that's this BTFP, the Bank Term Funding Program. But at the same time, liquidity, there's another chart I think I shared with you on Twitter that you kind of have this alligator jaws forming between, you know, the risk asset markets like stocks and what the liquidity is indicating as well.
Yeah, so part of the reason that I you know, kind of went net short 3 weeks ago and why I am positioned for my base case, which is a correction in the second half, is because I think that the liquidity tailwind that we had in the first half is now gone. I think it is now a liquidity headwind. That said, I can make an argument. Again, you always have to figure out how you can be wrong, right? Like, I understand how I can be wrong because I understand where some additional liquidity can come from. Part of the place that additional liquidity can come from is, as you just say, the BTFP. Another place that the liquidity can come from is the reverse repo, money coming back out of reverse repo and going into the market. The other thing is that, you know, if Yellen, for whatever reason, doesn't continue to issue at such a high rate, you know, maybe she feels like she's issued enough at some point and she can just keep the TGA at that level and not, you know, take it all the way back to $1.5 or $2 trillion. That could potentially do it. And we've also, in the second half, we have, you know, I think you mentioned the student loan forbearance expires. I think it's in August or September. So I think, and then there's been a number of surveys that have showed that the people, again, these are surveys, how real they turn out to be is a good question. But, you know, people have said that it would be a significant burden if they had to start making those payments again. There's a number of surveys that have showed that the number of car payments that are over 1,000 have spiked, and that's going to be a drag on liquidity. And I think the other thing that people may not realize is that with earnings, company earnings, this is somewhat related to liquidity, but not totally related to liquidity, is that the earnings that companies were pumping out over the last 18 months were influenced by inflationary pressures, right? Because as things got inflated, their earnings got inflated as well. With inflation coming down and perhaps coming to, and if you, the rate of change on inflation has been coming down pretty quickly. It's still elevated, but it's starting to come down. And again, we talked, I know I'm bouncing all over the place, but all this stuff kind of comes in together. You know, on many episodes previously, we talked about we were going to get into the summer and the year-over-year inflation expectations were going to start to drop, or the year-over-year numbers on inflation were going to drop pretty significantly. So as those year-over-year numbers start to drop in inflation, I think those year-over-year numbers in earnings have a potential to drop pretty significantly as well. And so we're going to start to see that in August when second quarter earnings start to get released. But it's for all these reasons that I think that while we don't, we will not have the negative liquidity, or the, we will not have the liquidity tailwind that we had in the first half. I think it will be a headwind, and I think that will contribute to a correction. The other thing we haven't talked about on this episode, we've talked about it many times before, is, you know, with rates now being where they're at, and then we're now 15 months into it, it often takes 12 or 15, anywhere from, I don't know, 9 to 18 months for interest rate hikes to actually show up in the markets as people are refinancing, which a lot of these are now starting to refinance. A lot of high yield issuance is starting to get refinanced. They're going to get financed at significantly higher rates. And so that's going to be a net drain on liquidity, I believe. That is kind of why I think, you know, we're due for some kind of a correction. Now, I am not in the camp that we are going to have an epic crash and a Great Depression the last 3 or 5 or 10 years or whatever it is. I do think we could get a pretty significant correction. But I think it, as of right now, my base case is it's a dip that you buy and not a dip that you run away from. But I might change my mind, but as of right now, it's a buy the dip market for me.
It's BBTFD. Buy the dip. Yeah. So thinking about some of these things that you, I appreciate some of the things you just mentioned, because oftentimes I see in the comments, particularly on YouTube, where we don't have the expectation that people are going to binge watch Milkshake's Markets and Madness, although you should. But it's funny because they'll come in, they'll get a 30-second blip, or they'll, you know, only listen to the one episode. Last week we talked a little bit about your short position, and then they think it's this like 10-year play that you have on, right? That you're just, you know, like it's this, you're all in on one side of the trade. And I think understanding things like term premium and even, you know, we had a conversation with Hugh Henry and he was talking TLT, and people are always looking to chop somebody's head off or throw them under the bus for making a bad call. And it's sharing a view is the simplest way to illustrate kind of your interpretation of the markets, but it doesn't mean the way you're describing that view is identical to how you're playing the trade. So I think it's good that you kind of went through some of that. You talked about the violently sideways, some of these things you're looking at in liquidity. We did see, you know, interesting enough at the start of the year, you explained kind of where you started your view, how you got some of those things wrong. You're not alone, right? You look at the chart that you shared on Twitter, and at the beginning of the year, everyone, you know, was calling for, you know, a risk-off event. Bonds would outperform. Bonds have basically done nothing and have underperformed, while specifically, you know, the tech sector, NASDAQ, has done very, very well. So here we are again, 6 months later. You've rearticulated your view in a grounded way. Please, people, understand this is not, we're not predicting the end of the world. And anything that you're sharing about the next couple of weeks is not even a black and white view in terms of how you're watching things and making adjustments every day. But fast forward to the end of the year, how do you think you could get what you just said, or your apparent forecast for the next 6 months, how do you think you can get that wrong?
Well, I think I could get it wrong if, so my expectation is that they will hike in July. Unless something disastrous happens in the next 2 weeks, I think they're going to hike in July. I think most people are now kind of resigned to the fact that it will be one more, but then I think this consensus is that they will hike in July, and then that's probably it. I actually think unless we hit a really hard correction between now and September, they will raise again in September. Now, whether they should or not, that again, that's something completely different. I try not to get caught up in what they should do, and I just try to figure out what they're actually going to do. And I don't think that if markets corrected 15%, they would probably pause, but I don't think that they start cutting, and I don't think that they come out and get super dovish. Because I don't think they need to. You know, markets are, you know, think about what's happened over the last 15 months. Markets are almost where they were when they started hiking. Maybe they're a couple percent below they were when they started hiking, but they're very close to where they started when they started hiking. If 15 months ago, if somebody would have told Jerome Powell, I'm going to let you take interest rates from 0.5% to 6%, or 5.5 or 6, whatever the number is, and markets, unemployment will still be good, be very low, and markets will be within 3, 4, 5% of their all-time highs or when you started, would you take that? I guarantee you he would have hit that bid. He'd say, Absolutely. I will take that. But I don't think anybody would have believed that he could actually pull that off. But here we are, you know, and I don't think it will end well, but so far he has actually pulled it off. So let's go back to your specific question. Is where could I be wrong in the second half of the year? Where I could be wrong is if they don't hike in July, or we get into September and they not only do they not hike, but they start actually getting very dovish and start guiding towards lower rates. If the treasury drain compared to the liquidity coming out of reverse repo does not drain liquidity from the market the way I think it probably will, that I could get that wrong. And if Nvidia and some of these other high flying tech stocks continue to pump out very high earnings, that could push them even higher than they are now. I mean, it's very, you know, when you get a trend going like, and this whole AI thing, this is like the dot-com boom back in the 90s. It's kind of like the crypto boom over the last 4 or 5 years. You know, they can become manias, and these things can always go higher than you think are possible, right? So what I think is more likely to happen with AI is that, you know, the real AI companies, maybe like Nvidia or some of these others, will potentially, again, I don't know, will potentially hang on longer than a lot of these other tech companies that have really, you know, shared in the rise, even though they're not really an AI company, right? And so, but if that AI theme continues to play out and Nvidia and some of these other companies post, you know, stellar earnings in the second quarter or third quarter, then very possible I'm wrong. And that, you know, I'm not going to lie, that's going to be very frustrating. If I get the second half wrong, it's going to be very frustrating. Never said this job is easy. But I also know that, you know, my clients that I have clients that I customize their portfolios to them. And I've been very clear with them that this is a risky environment. I'm not saying we can't make money. We can make money, but this is also the type of environment where you can lose a lot of money. And they have invariably said, yeah, we get it. We want to make money, but we don't want to make money at all costs. We need to make sure we're protected on the downside as well. So, you know, while it's frustrating not to have shared in every dollar of upside, as a fiduciary, I feel like I'm still doing my job considering the environment that we're in.
Yeah, wealth preservation. That's, you're not trying to play the casino. But in the case of what we're talking about, and what you just shared as where you could potentially get your next 6 month view wrong, I think part of that potentiality is what we would potentially classify as a soft landing. One of the core components of that would be employment, because it doesn't seem at this point asset prices are going to lead the potential business cycle into recession. So maybe it's, or, you know, everyone was waiting for this huge correction in employment. We've talked about, you know, this past week, ADP, non-farm payroll, they're not showing that anywhere. And across the economy, it doesn't really feel like that. Now, something like an AI is very easy to argue that's deflationary and it's not good for employment, but it's, you're suddenly, you know, you're not going to go to the grocery store and there's robots everywhere. And yeah, some of these trends have been in place for a long time. So where do you think the soft landing, if it's even possible, comes in? If asset prices, even if they're just violently sideways, and we don't see a big move in employment?
Well, I think what could happen is I think we could easily get a 10 to 20% correction again, go back down to kind of the similar levels that we were at, you know, last September, maybe a little higher than we were last September. And the Fed stops hiking but doesn't start cutting, and markets go sideways for a year or two. That, to me, that would be a soft landing, and I don't rule out that possibility. And to be honest, that's kind of my base case right now. Is I don't necessarily think that you know, we're going to have a correction and then we're going to rocket back to all-time highs. But I do also think, you know, I continue to believe that we are going to have a currency crisis and sovereign debt crisis. To me, it's inevitable. Whether it happens this year or next year, I don't know. I've thought it was going to happen 3 or 4 years ago when COVID happened. They were able to kick that can down the road. But to me, that is inevitable. And when that happens, I expect, while there will initially be a sell-off in U.S. equities, I think that they will be a primary beneficiary of people leaving sovereign global sovereign bonds. So when people start selling European treasuries and Japanese treasuries and Chinese treasuries, I think U.S. Equities will be seen as a relative safe haven. Doesn't mean they're safe, but on a relative basis, I still think they will be an attractive place. And so in that type of an environment, it would not, and if all the central banks crank up the printers again, I would expect the U.S. equities to outperform just like they have, you know, for the last several years. You know, the other thing that we haven't really talked about this, John, but at the beginning of the year, the trade of the year, just like it always is sell U.S. and buy emerging markets. I think I can't tell you how many times in my career that's been going into January. That's the trade of the year, and it never, ever works out. And it hasn't worked out this year again. I mean, you know, I think EM equities are up 5 or 10%. Kind of depending on where you're at, but you know, U.S. equities are up between 15 and 35%. So, you know, once again, the trade of the year, you know, short the U.S. and go long EM is just not working out. And if we get into some kind of a global risk off or global crisis event, I think that becomes even more pronounced.
Well, it has been a little leaky this week even, but with that in mind, have you, we're not going to do it in this episode because we're kind of getting to the point where it probably makes sense to wrap this up, but we are going to try to introduce frequency back into the recordings. And so maybe we'll be able to talk about gold and the dollar milkshake in more depth, or at least kind of provide an update in context of what we're talking about here. But as you're mentioning these foreign sovereign markets and just EM in general, have you made, have you re-upped with Peter Schiff on the gold coin bet?
No, we didn't do it this year. We should, when you get back, maybe we go out and see him and we'll make another bet.
We'll freshen it up. And yeah. Then one last thing before we wrap up, you and I haven't talked about this at all. And I don't think it's necessarily the social media world that you spend a lot of time in, but we had the introduction of Instagram's Threads a couple days ago. And I jumped over there as soon as it happened, a little more active in Instagram. And I have to admit, man, it's freaking cringe. It's really cringe. It's
more than Twitter?
No, Twitter. So, you know, going on this journey with you, I know you've built an audience that just loves to battle with you, and you kind of do it in your own little poke you in the eye kind of way. So it's been interesting, you know, managing the YouTube and kind of being more part of that conversation to kind of see how people... They don't, like we've mentioned in this episode, they don't listen to the full story. They're catching, you know, one little comment and taking it out of context, like someone tried to do with you on a YouTube thumbnail this week. I thought that was so funny. It was just very cheap shots, right? So I've kind of learned to appreciate that because there is value in that dialogue. You know, some people just hate life and they want to, you know, attack anyone that they can. Other people don't agree with you and, you know, may find you to be a certain type of D-head, but...
yeah, literally somebody, yeah.
Yeah. But there tends to be... It's not even tends to be. That's why, you know, you said it yourself, Twitter's the arena. There is value in that conversation. And it's early. The whole world hasn't jumped on Threads yet. And it's a lot of kind of the early adopters, so to speak. And it's just so much hugs and kisses and fairy dust that it makes, you know, LinkedIn look like fun. So yep. Hopefully over time there's a bit more discourse, but there's already censoring going on. And so I guess long story short, it's a complete Twitter copycat without the soul. And it's made me, you know, appreciate the fact that you got to have a little bit of you know, hater interaction to make it fun. You don't go to a sporting event so both teams can just, you know, hug and kiss. It's, you want that intensity and that rivalry, and this is a bit of the arena. So there's a little bit of update on Threads if you haven't checked it out yet.
All right. I actually haven't checked it out, but I will. Oh, but you know, one thing I forgot that I wanted to make sure we talk about is the other thing that happened a little bit on Twitter this week was the BRICS currency kind of made a resurgence. You know, the BRICS have their meeting coming up in August. And, you know, I don't remember if it was earlier this week or last week.
Brian, I want to interrupt you really quick if you don't mind.
Sure.
I would love to leave that as a cliffhanger because where we just rolled over into the 30-minute mark, I think there's a potent conversation that we can probably kick off the week that evolves around that. So you were just about to tickle everyone's fancy, but let's leave that as a cliffhanger. And in addition to that cliffhanger, you also have a trip coming up.
Yeah, I'm going to Argentina, leaving tomorrow. So I'm really excited to go down there. I've never been there. I have a lot of friends that are from there. So I'm looking forward to, I've heard about it. I'm excited to go there. And for a guy like me who's into currencies and, you know, monetary policy and sometimes bad monetary policy, I mean, that's like the motherland, right? I mean, they've had a currency crisis for 22 years. So, you know, it's the dollar is very strong versus the Argentinian peso. And, you know, it's too bad for the people that live there because, you know, Argentina is used to be a very wealthy country, and the government in many ways has just squandered the country's wealth. So anyway, I'll do some reporting regarding cab drivers and money changers and, you know, how much cash it takes to buy a Coca-Cola versus the United States and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, hopefully you're going down there with a film crew, so it can be like, you know, a Jack Ryan real
this
life.
This is my film crew right here.
All right. Well, either way, it'll be good entertainment. So, look, guys, we appreciate you coming on board, and as we kind of discussed here, we're always open to changing our views when the information changes. We appreciate the engagement of all kinds, whether you love us or hate us. It's all part of the journey of figuring it out and learning and having conversations. So keep it on Twitter, keep it on YouTube, and ignore the sunshine and rainbows that's pretending to happen over at Threads. You can find us on Twitter and YouTube at Milkshakes Pod. You can find Brent at the handle Santiago AU Fund. You can find me at John Kutzmita. There's more information about the Dollar Milkshake Theory, the show, and all the things we talk about on our website at milkshakespod.com. I think that'll do it. Brett, any last words?
No, I hope everybody had a great 4th of July. I hope the rest of the summers go well. And next time I talk to you, I'll be from the Southern Hemisphere.
Sounds good. We'll see you guys soon. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.